you know, the age-old adage is, you know, the best place to find more gold is where it's been found before. So that's kind of our model. And that's why, you know, your point, Andy, is why we're focused in eastern Idaho with our Fairtrack Arnett Gold Project, now 4.6 million ounces of gold. And in Utah, just outside of Salt Lake City, with our Merkur Gold Project, 1.4 million ounces of gold. At Merkur, we've got a lot of digesting to do. We've got to get caught up with the results that are out. So we're going to have a lot of press releases over the next 2-3 months related to that. But then we roll into the metallurgical test work. We've got column tests that we're going to be doing on a lot of this material. So those results will keep coming out into the first quarter next year. And then we'll be back drilling in the second quarter. So it's going to be continuous news flow from the Merkur Gold Project.
Hugh Agro, Revival Gold. Good afternoon or good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Great to be with you, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Just to all my viewers and listeners, full disclosure, I am an investor in Revival Gold, and Revival Gold is a sponsor to naturalresourcestocks.net. So I just want to make that very clear to everybody. Also, I bought all of my shares in the open market, just as most, if not all of you, will be doing if you do decide to invest in Revival Gold. Hugh, let's start out with really a recap of 25. We've seen gold explode here. They had a sharp correction, but brief. We're kind of, I think, building a really good solid base here. But more to why is gold at $4,000 an ounce or just over that? And I want to say Canadian, $5,500 an ounce. Well, why is that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot better experts out there than me on this, but it seems to me we're seeing the classic case of fiat currencies diminishing in value, right? And that pace of diminishing value is accelerating. And we're seeing that with what we buy in the markets, what we buy, you know, to build these mines, what we buy to live our everyday lives, right? So I think that's what it's about. It's about the devaluing of currencies. And, you know, you're seeing groups like Morgan Stanley and UBS and Goldman coming out with, you know, close to $5,000 gold estimates for the end of the 2026. I don't see that trend turning the other way. You know, I'm a mining engineer by training. You know this, Andy. And so I look at it from an industry perspective. And what I see is that the industry is being really disciplined. So on the supply side, I don't see a lot of new metal coming into the markets. And I continue to see from all the statistics we get from the World Gold Council and others that that gold is being lapped up by central banks to shore up their currencies and as an alternative to U.S. treasuries.
Got it. So obviously then you see the price of gold. You don't see that really at the worst case falling much further. You see a floor here. Is that what you're saying, or what you would guess if you would at these levels?
Yeah, I don't see a lot of new supply coming on. I don't know where the new supply is going to come from. And in fact, actually what I see is increasing retail interest in gold. And, you know, the broader market is underinvested in the metal. We know that from all the statistics on where money is invested in the world. And we know that if retail demand continues to pick up pace here, if the central banks, you know, start to add more broadly to their portfolios, there's just not enough gold to go around. So, no, I don't see a retrenchment from these high levels of gold. I mean, do we go back down to $3,000 an ounce at some point? Sure, that's a possibility. Then the question is, you know, what are these projects worth that companies like Revival Gold are advancing at $3,000 gold? We've evaluated them at, you know, in the low 2000s. What are they worth at 3,000? What are they worth at 4,000? It's a lot. It's a lot of value in the ground, and there's not very many of them. And especially, there's not very many of them in the United States, and that's key, I think. We see geopolitical tensions around the world.
Yeah, and it kind of goes with my thesis. You said not very many in the US. It goes with my thesis, and I'm interested in what your thoughts are on this. My thesis is that the world is becoming smaller in the sense it's becoming more regionalized, if you would. And again, Canada is its own country, where the US is its own country, Mexico and Latin America, they're all their own countries, but I see that more of a regional as opposed to global. So it's important. Yeah, talk to me about that. Is that something you see, or I guess if you project out over the next several years, do you see a more regional?
Yeah, listen, when you're onto something there, when we think about Mexico, Canada, the United States, and mining, we have to be very specific about where projects are for them to succeed. You're not going to have a mining project succeed in California. You're not going to have a mining project succeed in a drug cartel infested part of Mexico. You're not going to have a mining project succeed in a Native First Nations region of Canada. You've got to be looking at places in the world, places in the United States in particular, where gold mining has been successfully done in the past, and where communities understand the economic and social benefits that come from responsible mining. That's what Revival Gold has chosen to do. That's in our name. We go to places where gold has been successfully mined but in the past. And the age-old adage is, the best place to find more gold is where it's been found before. So that's kind of our model. And that's why, your point, Andy, is why we're focused in Eastern Idaho with our Beartrack Arnett gold project, now 4.6 million ounces of gold. And in Utah, just outside of Salt Lake City, with our Merkur Gold Project, 1.4 million ounces of gold, and moving quickly to reconstruction and redevelopment.
Got it. So let's talk about that here, Hugh. This is how I evaluate companies, and I want you to comment because I get this question just all the time. How does an investor evaluate a junior? How do we evaluate? Really, what's a good project and why not? And this is what I tell people, and this is really because this is I practice what I preach. I like to see at least 2.5 million ounces in the ground with a pathway to 5 million. Obviously, the more the better. So I'd love to see a path to 10 million or close to 10 million ounces in the ground, if you would. I like to see at least two projects, if not three projects. And I'm doing this just because that's what, correct me if I'm wrong, in your way you do things, because that's what majors like to look at. They like to see two to three projects. They don't want to see just one project, if you would. I like to see a relatively tight share structure. And that can be also very relative. It can be if an explorer can be, I would say, under 100 million shares outstanding. A developer like yourself, maybe a quarter of them, I mean, 250 million shares outstanding, fully diluted. But again, there's a lot of grace and leeway with that, just to seeing where the project is. And I love to see great management, if you would, taking this to a mine, even though the mine that might get bought out. I want to see options, if you would. Talk to me about how you, as an investor, put on your investor hat on, how you would evaluate a gold mining company that's similar to yourself.
Yeah, these are all good themes, great themes. I think you're right about, two or three projects, because it's good to be diversified and have a pipeline of